When you reflect back on the days of Gentle Giant, how do you feel about what the band accomplished in terms of music and musically?
Well, I have to say I'm quite happy and quite proud, actually, I think, of the legacy, which apparently we left, but at the time we didn't even know what that was and what we were doing as far as putting the band together and going on the road and making albums at the time. So that it was just at a time, as far as the band was concerned, of putting, you know, ourselves together, making ourselves a band, as it were, and pushing ourselves musically for each other, and hopefully getting a following at the same time and earning, and trying to earn a living doing that. The fact that it's lasted, the interest has lasted this long, is very gratifying to all of us, and I'm obviously quite pleased about it. I didn't expect or know that the interest was going to continue when we decided to disband, but obviously has and expanded into different generations, which I'm obviously quite happy about.
Well, that leads to the next question: is why, in fact, was there a specific reason that the band did break up back in the day?
Oh yeah, it was
in short.
It was there's always, there's many reasons, but ultimately the reasons were that we lasted the course and it was time to move on. From the beginning, the time we started, we started out of the remains of a group that myself and my brother was in, called Simon Dupree and the Big Sound.
Oh,
and
yeah,
we were quite popular. We had a couple of very big hit records in England and Europe. We toured, and we were both at school. We were in high school when we had hit records, and we were working in the same studio as the Beatles. And this was, crazy for kids who were in their teens.
Yeah.
So we'd been touring for 15 years by the time Gentle Giant decided to disband. But I think, to be honest with you, our musical tastes and what we were influenced by was also a party to that, and also our personal lives. I was married with a kid in tow, and so was Carrie. To go out and tour for 3 or 4 months at a time was more difficult. And also, I think that it was the creative juices were starting to wane a little bit, and I think it was there was elements of not disenchantment, but disappointment we hadn't reached some of the areas, we hadn't reached some of the audiences that some of our contemporaries had reached. So we shrugged and said, "Okay, let's move on." And we did.
Yeah. Well, a nuts and bolts question that I don't have on the sheet is: did you guys actually make money from your records? A lot of bands in those days ended up doing all this stuff and making very little money. Did you guys, was it lucrative for you to do Gentle Giant?
Making records was really kind of a means to an end as far as we were concerned. Where the group was, it was very important for the group to at least make a living was playing live. And we toured and toured a lot and grew our audiences through our live appearances.
Mm-hmm.
Making a record was only just grist for our live appearances, so we had new music to play. However, we had some kind of advance from a record company, and we put it into recording, and if there was some amount left over, then it would go into our pockets. But it certainly didn't pay for the Ferraris and the houses in the country, that's for sure.
It was the live work.
The live work that kept us going and alive, and the fact that we were able to grow our audiences all over the world for the most part, and hopefully they enjoyed it, and we enjoyed playing for them and playing for ourselves too.
Well, yeah. What year did the band actually break up then?
It broke up in early mid 1980.
Now, we touched on this a little pre this, but why don't you run down what have the various members, you included, been doing since the end of that time when they broke up?
I think I know for the most part what the members have been doing. Decided to well, I was going to produce a couple of albums because of some bands that wanted me to get involved in their production, but I didn't particularly see myself sitting in the studio for 12 hours a day and not seeing sunlight, which, had been my want before that. So I got a call from a friend, a couple of friends actually, who had worked with me or with the group in England, who are now in New York, who were then in New York, should I say, at a company called Polygram Records, and they said, "Why don't you come to work at a record company?" And my initial thought was, "You must be kidding. That's kind of like joining the enemy." However, I needed to pay the rent. So I went to New York and met with the people there, and I thought, you know what, I can, I first of all, it wasn't as bad as I thought, to as far as the people were concerned anyway. And I thought, well, coming from where I was as a musician, I could make a difference in the perception of what a record company is to the artists. So I joined Polygram in 1982, and since then I've worked at three or four companies and have my own company now, and signed some fairly popular artists, some of which may well be poo-pooed by some of the people that prefer Gentle Giant music to some of the more popular rock music out there. But my first signing at Polygram was a group called Bon Jovi, and then Cinderella, and it was an era of this sort of MTV hair band stuff, and Tears for Fears I brought in, and Men Without Hats, that was a fun kind of project, and group Kingdom Come. I went on to run a company at Warner, at Time Warner, called ATCO Records, where I signed Pantera, AC/DC, Bad Company, lots of pop things too, and then went on to run a company called Roadrunner, and signed up Slipknot and Nickelback, etc. So that has been my career since the days of the Gentle Giant era. My brother Ray initially started doing music for TVs, but he got into production and had basically found and produced bands like the Sugar Cubes, Bjork, the Sundays, some very, very interesting groups in England. However, he got disenchanted by being in the studio himself and is now authoring and working with the management company of Genesis and Queen to author DVDs and be involved in that. Kerry, the keyboard player, went on to teach music. And keyboard, and John, the drummer, continued to drum until he was not able to because he's physically not well now. And Gary was an itinerant guitarist.
There have been some partial get-togethers in the past, like live and in the studio, such as Three Friends. Is there a possibility that there'll be a full reunion for perhaps some live performances to go along with the catalog that was being reissued? No. Okay.
pretty categorical. I think that the history has been written, and I think the what when we decided to disband, it was the end of the chapter, and the chapter is closed, and it's great to look back and reflect on it and reread it, but you can't rewrite it.
A lot of these old bands, I think Mott the Hoople just played in London for 4 days or something like that. And
Well, no, I think that there's certainly a demand for it, and I think we can probably do it. I'm sure we could do it, but it would be doing for the money. And to tell you the truth, I don't want to do that, and neither does Ray, and I don't think the band would do it. I think the one thing that separated, well, I don't want to be presumptuous here, but I think the one thing that we had, I mean, certainly as far as music was concerned. And even our own personal lifestyles in putting Gentle Giant together was the word integrity, and I don't want to lose that.
It's being in the business a long time myself, and the way that I've been in it, it is sort of sad to see people who were one way and believe something and espouse something, and then a couple
I'm not
generations,
judging
a couple
it.
decades later.
I understand it, and I understand that. Look, when you have to make a living, you have to do whatever it takes. I mean, you got to, you know, when you're out of a job, you've got to find a job. But as far as I'm concerned, and Ray and everyone else, there are other jobs to do, yeah, and personal growth and futures in the music area that I still haven't explored, and I'm going to continue to do that.
Yeah.
I don't want to go back. That would be. I don't want to be a parody of myself.
It's sad to
And I see many bands who I believed at certain points in their careers were quite good, but they decided to continue and I think that, well, this is my opinion, and that's all it is.
Right.
Is that they become parodies of who they were, and I don't want to be that way.
Right. Various parties have owned the rights to the Gentle Giant albums, and in 2005, the 35th anniversary editions were reissued. What's the situation? Have the rights now, all the rights or some of the rights, fully reverted to the band, so you're at last going to remaster and upgrade them?
Right. Well, the 35th anniversary editions were the band's, but we didn't have access to the actual quarter-inch masters. Now we have signed the group, to EMI, and we were able to finagle and strong arm EMI, because this was our original label, to go look in the vaults to find those original quarter inch tapes, and we did, and now we're remastering all the product, and also some stuff and music which was never heard before that Ray and Carrie has assembled, and some video footage as well for next year, which we're going to put out next year,
right,
on physical in CD form. And at the same time, only just this week, the group and we have put up the music digitally, which has never has been put up on iTunes and Rhapsody and all those other kind of...
November 3rd, areas. Right? It was when that happened?
This is just this week, yeah.
Yeah.
So this music has never been up on the digital format.
Right.
And
right.
Hopefully the kids, I will say, that had never even heard of Gentle Giant or know that this band existed, when they go look at under miscellaneous G's and look at for, I don't know, Lady Gaga, they'll see Gentle Giant and G's. And
there you go.
Something.
that's a real double bill, isn't it?
Well, and we played many other double bills. But, you know,
there were as fun as that, right?
We played with other bands that you'd wince and roll your eyes at. But
oh, that's the way it works. That's the way it works. Yeah, for sure. So there will be unreleased material. Is it digitally available at this point? And then when the CDs and stuff comes out from the original sessions for the albums, or that time period, certainly, right?
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, no, digital on iTunes. In fact, we've given them some live tracks that actually have never been heard of. But at the same time, next year, we'll have music that was never released ever, that we recorded and never put on albums.
Yeah.
So we'll have a couple of box sets and some concert appearances that we were able to get hold of from the BBC and a German film company. We'll put out on DVD also.
Yeah, there's a lot of them.
You know, a couple of albums on vinyl, why not?
There's an amazing amount of footage out there from all kinds of stuff that's TV around Europe and England and everything. It's mind-blowing.
US as well, yeah. I didn't realize how much work we did, but we worked a lot.
Well, there was a lot. There was a lot of bands that worked a whole lot, man, and the stuff that they got, a lot of it is very high quality, but record companies were record companies, and, you know, somehow in retrospect, if you take the effort like you did, to dig and keep after them, so forth, there's some amazing stuff that's being come up for all kinds of people, The Move and so forth and so on. In general, did you have a favorite album that Gentle Giant did?
Yes, I do. I mean, I hear all sorts of good things and all sorts of, you know, lousy things in all the albums.
Sure.
But I think probably my favorite album is Freehand. This is my personal favorite because I think it was the final gelling of the various members of the band from their backgrounds and their you know, personal backgrounds, personal musical backgrounds, into the jigsaw puzzle, which became a full picture I think it came together really well during that period of Freehand, the Power and the Glory period. It was an entity which became Gentle Giant, as opposed to trying to fit in these pieces into this
to figure out what Gentle Giant was.
Effectively, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the Freehand is probably my personal favorite, but there's other albums that I hear, you know, really interesting things in that I haven't, to be honest, I haven't listened to for many years, but I've re-listened to them and I thought, well, that's actually pretty good, and then thought the things that I thought were pretty good were pretty lousy. So, but I'm not going to tell you about the lousy stuff.
No, that's, we forget the lousy stuff, right?
Yeah.
We don't listen to it. It's because I mentioned to a couple other people about being able to speak to you or somebody in the band, and I guess for some reason in the States, if you talk to a Gentle Giant fan, the first album they're going to mention is In a Glass House.
Right.
And the one question that came up a couple times from people is, why wasn't it ever issued in the USA?
Because it was never issued in the USA because Columbia Records, who we were assigned to at the time, thought it was incredibly uncommercial, and no one would buy it.
Yeah.
So they said, "Nah, we're going to shelve it, and we don't want to put it out." And it never came out. It was, you know, quantitative, and that was it.
That's one of those rhetorical questions, right?
Yeah, I'm sure. And so therefore, it didn't come out. However, when we toured, which we did, we toured the USA constantly, and North America.
Multiple tours of the USA then.
Oh yeah, we toured playing that music, and in fact, it was one of the biggest import sellers.
Oh yeah.
Of that period of time, I was told. I mean, I've been told subsequently since then by various people who have been in the business and know that world that the album had imported something in the region of about almost a 500,000 units.
Yeah, that was my world actually. I have worked in since way back. I have worked in the import music, you know, LPs, etc. And in fact, right. I'm still doing that at this point in time from Europe. And I was at a company in Los Angeles named Green World.
Oh, sure.
Named after Brian Eno's In Another Green World album.
Yep.
And let me tell you, the fact that Glass House didn't come out here, I can't. We didn't sell 500,000 copies, but man, we ran through that. And the cover with a clear
volume.
Yeah, I mean, thank goodness it didn't come out here because they would have botched it in some way, you know.
I guess so. I mean, in certain respects,
it wouldn't have been done with that nice textured cover and the clear screen and all that, is what I mean. And so it was your guys' stuff. Even if it had come out here, we sold tons of it.
Yeah, I mean, it sold incredibly well. So in that respect, maybe Columbia did us a favor by saying it was not a commercial entity, and therefore it became a kind of collected item, and or something. But I think the album is actually a fairly good album too. Very tough to make, but it was a good album.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the slight switch, not really, but sort of in line with what fits in with that. The music seemed, again, this is things when I talked to two or three people about you who are like really in the business and fans and all this, they said the music seemed more progressive in the beginning and tended to go more in a commercial direction as you kind of went along. That's their impression. And was that intentional, or was that the result of a push from the label, or maybe it was simply you figuring out what you really wanted to do and the times changed and so forth and so on?
I think what you said is a combination of all things, except there was never a push from the label. We were a very insular kind of entity. So we were never sort of A&R'd, if you like, by anyone at the label or a record company. We did what we did, and we handed it in, and that was it. I think, progressive. I don't know, the word progressive is one where I'm not sure what it actually means, because we're packed in this progressive world. But our, you know, as I said a little earlier, the individual members had come from different walks of the music, their music history and the music musical sort of backgrounds. So we were, but I didn't think what we didn't do is set out to sound like King Crimson or,
right.
or whoever was popular at the same period of time. But going on to what you're talking about, I think I know what you're saying, is that the songs towards the sort of latter part of the 70s became shorter. And well, I think, you know, and there was elements of commerciality to it, as opposed to just being kind of pieces of music, which is kind of where Gentle Giant were. There were elements of, let me think here, what's the word? The elements of okay, let's try to be what Kansas and Genesis and the bands had done, because these bands had been supporting us for a while, and suddenly they were exploding on the radio, and we were still not. So, yeah, I can't say categorically it wasn't a factor, but we certainly also were motivated by our personal growth and
mm-hmm.
seeing what we could do in different areas. So even from the album, the first album, to the very last, it was something that was also integral to the band. So whatever, you know, factors made us write the albums, which were supposedly less progressive, were a combination of all these things. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there were movements towards music which we were interested in, and yeah, there was elements of okay, let's see if we can do what they did and have a hit song. We were,
mm-hmm.
and there was those elements didn't really work, to tell you the truth. We were lousy at trying to make hit singles or trying to think about radio. So in retrospect, you know, it was a good idea, because we had to do it. But it didn't work. But they still stand up as entities, the albums that I think the fans are talking about.
Right.
They're of their time.
Well, I cringe at that word progressive, though. I was one of the first people in the country that was selling all of that stuff at Green World, and even up here in Portland at a company called Intergalactic Trading Company, because progressive became a formula, when in fact what progressive meant to me, and to what it means in reality, is progressively changing. You have an idea, and we touched on this a little bit earlier, where you start off experimenting and doing something, and then at a certain point in time you figure out how to do it a little bit better, and then you want to do it a little bit differently. And you don't start and you don't produce the same record at one, your first album, as you do at your sixth.
Okay.
It should obviously be different, and you get older, your tastes change and everything. So I mean, I still have a column in Progression. I'm sure you've probably spoken to John Collins at Progression Magazine.
Yes, I did. Yes.
Yeah, and he does a really good magazine. And I like him, but he's kind of stuck in that thing, you know,
right,
mindset.
You know, listen, I understand that. And
oh yeah,
there,
sure.
There's elements of elitism in this as well.
Yeah.
However, you know, I think as you said, I mean, yeah, you have to move and continue to grow, or shrink or whatever.
Well, not just musically, but personally. I mean,
personally,
you know,
every, sociologically, every way. And it affects what you're doing creatively. But what I have found is that being bagged into this progressive bag is that, the one thing that Gentle Giant, I think, had and have is that we never took ourselves seriously. We never took ourselves to be the London Symphony Orchestra playing this most important music
mm-hmm.
you'll ever hear in your whole
right.
life. And there's elements, to be honest with you, of some of the other bands who are contemporaries, who I think have elements of pomposity to it.
Oh yeah, sure.
That we
sure.
never had, because we just weren't pompous. We just did it for our own sakes, for each other,
right.
pushing our own musical boundaries
right.
for each other, just to get better
mm-hmm.
and see if we can make the band better and our own personal musicality better, and fitting it together as a group. So. Again, playing, you know, and not thinking that we were changing history with our music. We just did what we did.
Right. Well, in effect, you did end up sort of changing a little bit of history with your music, because that was a whole historical period where the best part of it was that you had all kinds of people doing all kinds of amazingly different things and doing it for their own reasons, and it all kind of formed a little window of, I don't know, 10 years or less, probably, where if you listen to any of that music today, forget the musicianship, you know, lens that you wear, but just in terms of the diversity, the open, wide open nature of everybody doing what they did, pompous or not, you can't even compare it to a lot of the stuff that's being produced in the same, quote, rock genre today, which is kind of, I actually did a box set, I produced it for Rhino Records back in the late 90s called Supernatural Fairy Tales, which was a compilation of my particular view of progressive music over the, about a 10-year period. And I began it with Traffic and ended it with like Frank Zappa and
two great bands.
Well, yeah, but I mean, the point was, is it wasn't all Genesis, it wasn't King Crimson, it was like Magma, it was Wigwam, it was Ange, it was, you know, I think we even tried to get a Gentle Giant track from EMI. I don't know that they'd let us do it. We couldn't get Crimson, and people said, you know, man, the Golden Earring, they're not, come on, man. The Golden Earrings, Radar Love, is one of the classic pieces of rock and roll done in a way that could have never been imagined prior Golden Earring, you know?
Right.
But it's a weird thing. On a totally different thing, what is there any, aside from, I'll put this caveat in, but go ahead and ignore it if you want to. In terms of today, artists or music, is there anything that you listen to and that you like? What's your favorite thing to listen to, assuming a lot of musicians don't listen to music anymore, if they're in the business or not? Do you have something today that you really like to listen to when you're driving in the car or when you're relaxing or whatever context?
Well, you know, my problem is that I'm in the music business, or the business of music, which is what I found it was, ultimately. So I find myself listening to music, if it's new music, if you like, and critiquing it and thinking, okay, what it should be like, if it can, if we can do this or that to it.
Right.
However,
yeah.
There's some
guilty pleasure, maybe. You know.
Excuse me.
Is there a guilty pleasure you have musically? You know.
I mean, you know, listen, I love. I mean, my background is R&B and soul music, and mm-hmm. any band that has elements of rock, and when I say rock, not just, you know, we're not just talking about, you know, playing a hard, you know, a down-tuned chord from,
right.
We're talking about blues and the elements of what rock and roll is about, and rock music, and, you know, which is a different thing to classical music, by the way.
Oh, sure.
There's some great blues-influenced bands that I enjoy. I don't really want to say one or two, because there are so many. What I would say is that, you know, I toot my horn and say, I'll listen to the bands that I signed.
Sure.
Whether it's, a Pantera, who, by the way, are incredible musicians. Dream Theater I signed, you'd probably know them.
Oh, yeah, sure. I know Pantera.
Very good musicians, you know, whether it's AC/DC. I love AC/DC. There you go.
Their new album is not too bad.
I signed them to Atco, and made the reservation when they were getting dropped by Atlantic.
Yeah.
And understood that how they made their mark. They were quintessentially a punk band, but were based in the kind of blues area.
Mm-hmm.
And it was interesting for me to see how they became popular, because what they did was so simple yet mm-hmm. so effective.
Well, they toured like crazy. I mean, they toured like crazy.
Oh, toured and toured, but the music stood up and has up for this long, because they did certain things that they did for themselves, actually, for the most part.
Sure.
Very, very, very similar, but very different, of course, and musically. Very similar to Gentle Giant.
Yeah.
Their music has held up, and it's become timeless.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, and I think, you know, in the respect that I'm looking at remastering the albums I'm doing, I hear elements, and again, I don't want to sound pompous myself here, but there's elements of timelessness to it.
Mm-hmm.
And the same goes for AC/DC. I think the fact that they used just, and I've been in the studio with them, they use the rhythm guitar as the rhythm, and it's not hi-hat or a kick drum.
Mm-hmm.
They use Malcolm's guitar, Malcolm Young's guitar, as the rhythm, and the kick drum is one on the downbeat, and they don't have fills in the drums. It's very interesting, fascinating way of doing, of playing blues based hard rock music.
Yeah, it's guitar music.
Yeah,
basically. Yeah.
Yeah,
okay, so
this is my guilty pleasure, is AC/DC.
That's a good one, because I have been this progressive type, in not in quotes, all my life. So I would always say, hey, have you heard the new this or the new that, to, you know, people who are buying stuff from me or reading the magazine or something, and they go, you're kidding me, you actually listen to that? And I said, she makes the most amazing, and what about this song and this song? It's like,
there are other guilty,
you don't want this to get out, you know, that you listen to.
Pleasures. I mean,
oh yeah, sure.
you can't get a better songwriting team and songwriters than ABBA.
Oh, that's hilarious. We just watched Muriel's Wedding again for the second or third time the other night, and I said to Connie, my partner, I said, I saw this movie, and I went out and bought ABBA. They're so amazingly great.
Great songs, brilliantly constructed.
Oh, yeah.
Pure candy pop.
Oh, pop is so great. Yeah. But the last question, basically, is, so this week, the seven Gentle Giant albums have been released digitally on iTunes, Rhapsody, and other digital channels.
Correct.
Okay. And EMI is going to release in the same seven albums in January. Is that right?
The same seven, seven or eight, I think. Yeah, seven. And is it seven? Yeah, I think so. Yeah, and a DVD, of course.
On CD, plus a DVD of live footage as well?
Yep, it's called Giant in the Box.
Giant in the Box. Okay, now, to get to the question, is there a possibility, there's not going to be any tours or anything, is there a possibility, and I think we've already answered this, but I'll ask it anyway, that you guys might record something again? Not tour, any of this, but try one time in the studio to see if you could get something together or not.
As a group, Gentle Giant?
Yeah.
No.
No.
Because
okay.
it would, again, encapsulate something that we can't be now. We're
right.
Different. We moved on from different things,
right.
and became different people and moved on to different ways of life. However, you can never say never about some of us getting together and saying, okay, let's try something.
Right.
Again, that doesn't commit me or anyone else to saying, okay, it's anyone else, but my family or their families are going to hear it. But you know, listen, you don't know. I think Ray and Carrie actually are talking about getting together and seeing if they can produce some magic. And they said, I'll be part of that if I have time and energy. But you know what? Who knows? It may not happen. It may happen. But and we're not going to start thinking about putting an album together and saying, okay, let's call it Gentle Giant and let's go make. You know, let's go roll it out and see if we can make hay while the business is aware of Gentle Giant. That's not what I want to do. That would be, again, almost a similar kind of situation as reforming and just for the hell of getting a few bucks in the bank. I wouldn't do that.